Good afternoon.
I apologize for the late start. A call to order the committee meeting for the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee. First up on our agenda is the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and an update regarding Rent Help Minnesota. I believe Commissioner Jennifer Ho is here with us today. So Commissioner, once you're set, go ahead and begin. And thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Chairman Duckworth, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Ho, and I am the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. I just want to thank the committee for allowing me to go first today so that I can pick up another meeting after this, so thank you very much. I'm going to provide just a very brief update on where we're at with the Rent Help MN program, and I think Dan Kitzberger is out there in the ether controlling the slides. Next slide, Dan. So just a couple of quick reminders. It was created by the federal government as a temporary emergency rental assistance program. We were open for applications from April 20th, 2021 through January 28th, 2022. We received over 100,000 applications for assistance. As of the 15th of March, we had paid out assistance on behalf of 54,500 households. We still have about 10,700 applications that are in process. And then we were thrown a curveball last Monday. We found out from the Treasury that they reallocated $15.7 million of ERA-1 from other states to us. Let's say completely taken by surprise, because nothing that they had said previously had led us to believe that there would be an allocation, or if there were, that we would receive some. Minnesota was one out of only 8 states that received reallocation. Some reallocations did go to local jurisdictions. And when I took a look at the states, we're sitting there notably with very large states like New York, California, Illinois, and Texas. So I don't know why, but we're happy to have it, I guess is what I'd say. Next slide, please. So what does this do to the basic math of the program? But what it means is in total, we have about $472.6 million available for direct assistance. And over on the right, in the top row, you'll see how we arrive at that. It's the amount of direct assistance from the original ERA-1 and ERA-2 allocations, the amount that is specified for direct assistance, the amount of 15.7 when you take out the admin, so 14.2. And then we have the $20 million of the state fiscal recovery fund money that was repurposed to help us make sure that we can pay out claims received through January. As I said, we still have over 10,000 applications that are in process, so the total amount of direct assistance paid is still unknown. But if you take a look at the second column, we had over $550 million of direct assistance that was requested. As of last week, about $70 million had been declined or withdrawn. We've put out $414 million, and we have about $65 million left to adjudicate. So that's where we're at with the program. In terms of, the 15.7 helps me sleep a little better as we're working through the final applications in terms of whether or not of the applications we'll have funds remaining to be able to pay them. I have 15.7 million more degrees of confidence that we'll end up in a better place, but until we get through them all we're really doing is using past performance as a way to estimate where we'll be. If you just took a look at how much is requested, we have more requested than we have available, but we do have, our history suggests that some of those won't prove to be eligible or they'll be withdrawn. So just my final slide in sum, in terms of what's coming, we're just continuing to process the pending applications and putting payments out. And then in the ERA 2 allocation, the ERA 1 expires September 30th, which is one of the reasons that I believe that they did the reallocation when they did, so that those of us who received it would have enough time to spend it before it expires on September 30th. But the ERA 2 funds go well into 2025. And one of the stated purposes for those are the housing stability services. So those will be available for us to be able to help families when the direct assistance is no longer available. I think those, I would be remiss if I just didn't say that the need for assistance continues and is great. By some estimates, there are 70,000 renting households in Minnesota who are behind on their rent. So it doesn't change the fact that it would actually have to be a significant amount of reauthorized money for us to be able to anticipate being able to bear even a month's worth of rent arrears. And so 15.7, while significant in terms of providing an additional buffer to the claims that I'm working through right now, is not sufficient to anticipate doing anything large scale. In the event that there were some ERA 2 direct assistance dollars left, we would consider doing some very targeted programming with those funds. So I think attempted to answer the questions that the chair and Mr. Hansen sent my way, but happy to take other questions.
Thank you, Commissioner, and we will be mindful that you have another engagement to get to, so we'll give you a few questions and let you get out here. But if the keeper of the slides could go back one for me, please. And I have just a couple questions right off the bat. So,
Chairman, you're hard to hear. I don't know if your mic is on.
I will speak louder.
Thank you,
no
sir.
Problem.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
For letting me know. I just want to make sure I understand the situation correctly. Right now, as it stands, even with the additional money coming from the federal government, we have received, I should say the agency has received more requests in terms of dollars than they still have that could be paid out to fulfill those requests if we assumed that all of them were valid. Is that a correct assessment at this point?
Yes, if everything were paid as requested, we would not have enough money to pay, but our experience is that there are often adjustments, and some of them are
sure.
Declined for not being eligible.
When I look at that slide, and it has under the $550 million category, it says $70 million declined or withdrawn. I'm curious if you know whether dollar amount or percentage, how many of those are withdrawn versus declined, and does withdrawn mean that they are taking themselves out, or are they just withdrawing that application, or how does that happen? Just out of curiosity.
Thanks, Chairman, and I was asking some questions of my team just yesterday on the same thing, because I was thinking that as we move to this phase of it, there will be more questions around the declines and the withdrawns. As you know, there were multiple local jurisdictions that also received money. So one of the reasons that somebody may have withdrawn an application from us is that they might have had a second application in with a local jurisdiction. Somebody might have changed their housing situation and pulled back something. For declined, a lot of the declines are people who applied who didn't have rent past due. We ran the program as eligibility criteria being having past due rent, and some people applied with only forward rent. There are a couple anomaly cases, people who live in Iowa. People who own their homes. I mean, you know, there are a couple of outliers like that, but I'd say the majority of the declines were people who weren't eligible because they didn't have back due rent. There were a very, very small number of cases where people were ineligible because they were over income. But if you'll remember, I mean, most of the people that we served were well within and well below the income limits set by the feds.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I've been fired as the chair, so I'll turn it over to Senator Drahan.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just caught the end of it, but thank you. Apologize, I had a bill up in another committee. Members, any questions? Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. Do we need to? Nope, I'm good. So on one of the slides, you talked about, if you go forward one more slide, I believe.
There are only three.
There, so. Yep, okay. Right here. It talks about housing stability funds are still available for housing navigators and eviction prevention. And so I know there are a lot of people that still, you know, are behind on their rent. So do they, could they still call 211? Could they still go to Rent Help MN? Or do they go to their county? Or where do they go to get assistance from either a navigator to find a more affordable place to live, which is very hard in this tight market, or to get assistance if needed?
Commissioner?
Chairman Dreheim and Senator Dietzick, 211 is still taking a record number of calls and continues to have that call center that we fund staffed. Of course, 211 existed before Rent Help MN Call Center was put in place, but the Rent Help MN Call Center continues to take a record number of calls. We'll have that in place so that people who have questions about the status of their application are in place. So we'll continue to have that functioning as long as we have applications in the queue. Yeah, I think before we had either the Emergency Rental Assistance Program or we're using CARES Act funding for emergency housing assistance, you know, we had a world in which it wasn't very systemic, like simple to use, but people could go to their counties for assistance. Oftentimes, if you need help with rent, you maybe are eligible for health care, child care, food assistance. So we think it's good for folks to contact their county because that can be a doorway to other benefits. You also have community action programs and homeless prevention programs running through nonprofits, including with the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program dollars that you appropriate to us. So what I'd say is that and then some of the local jurisdictions are also finishing up with the allocations of funding that they had received. In fact, my understanding is that Hennepin County also received some additional funds, about $400,000. So Rent Help MN created a single portal, a single doorway statewide for people to be able to come to find out if they had assistance. We kind of returned to a world where there are many doors and funding streams that aren't really scaled to the level of need that we have at this time.
Any follow-up, Senator? Okay. Sarah Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. It was the $15.7 million extra. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Chairman and Senator Rosen, that's correct.
Thank you. Is there, does that follow in the same time confinements that all the rest of the money has to be dispensed? And is there a possibility of more money? This is always there was more money that showed up. So I'm just wondering what you did to get that extra money. how did that occur? Was there an application? And does it fit within those, the already designated timelines?
Chairman and Senator Rosen, I don't know what I did to get that money. We did submit a form in the timelines that the Treasury had outlined, and we had requested over $200 million. We had done that previously and received nothing in the first reallocation, which is where Treasury had basically signaled that if we hadn't received money in the first allocation, the odds of getting money in the second allocation were very low. We believe, but I can't confirm this, we believe one of the reasons that we received the reallocation is because we have spent in a very timely way compared to some other jurisdictions, so we're being rewarded for our performance. But I can't find anything on paper or any Treasury justification. I got an email at 4:40 on Monday saying I had $15.7 million and I had 3 days to say if I didn't want it. Needless to say, we didn't say that. So the question of whether or not there would be another reallocation, the timeline question. This is ERA 1 from the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2019. And that money, which was the first tranche, I guess since we call it ERA 1, has a September 30th of this year deadline on it, which is why we think we found out so that we had enough time to be able to get it out the door. I'm in the process of working with my team and my board to move all this money to the front of the line so that we spend it first since it has a shelf date on it. And then the ERA 2 extends into 2025. So I think the question of whether the Treasury will take back or not distribute ERA 2 and reallocate it in a timely way to states and jurisdictions that could spend it in a timely way is really open to discussion because it's got such a long tail on it. And those jurisdictions who haven't been able to spend it as quickly know that they could use it over that extended period of time. It's not usually the case that Treasury likes to move the money across state lines. In fact, they had indicated early on that it was their preference not to do that with this. But because some states, notably places like Delaware and Montana, I believe, received large allocations per capita of ERA 1, I think it just seemed, I mean, there was no way they were going to spend it by September 30th. And that's why the Treasury moved on this. So, I mean, if I was a betting person and, you know, I had to guess if we were going to get ERA 2 reallocation, I would say probably not. But, you know, I was wrong last week. So, I, you know, it would please me to be wrong again, I guess is what I would say there. But we're not counting on it, and we're not counting on it to be timely, that we could do it within the context of what we're doing. So if we were, let's say we found out in the fall that we were getting another state's ERA 2, we would have the opportunity to work with the community and be in conversation with stakeholders about what's the right kind of targeted way to put a program out that's smaller scale than what Rent Help MN has been.
Senator Rosen, are you good?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry if you had mentioned these timelines before, Commissioner, but that these are really important. It really does pull this all together. So thank you.
Good. Okay, thank you. So, and maybe I missed this. I apologize if you mentioned this earlier. With the new funds that you were able to be granted, you know, when we had talked, when you called me and told me the good news, you know, we had talked about what to do with those funds or what the priorities are. So I know earlier we had moved some funds out of the different pools of resources you got and put in for housing stability services, right? We had some funds that went into that. Where are we at with that portion? Where does that fall in? I got a text message today. I think Senator Rosen was on the same one, where a landlord is still owed some funds, six-figure funds. What other priorities? Can you just kind of give us a brief background on what your plan is with that extra funds?
Yes, happily. Chair Dragan, I have about 10,200 applications that are pending in the system right now. We do have more to process. Even though we closed two new applications, the people who process these have been humming along the whole time, continuing to make payments. I think that, you know, you'll remember we had over 23,000 applications that came in January. So we are working our way through those, but it'll take a little bit of time to get those paid. With these ERA 1 reallocated funds, we are moving them to the front of the line in our payment queue so that we will use all of those before we use additional ERA 2 funds because they have a September 30th deadline and they don't have the expanded uses that the ERA 2 authorization created. So ERA 2 has more uses and a longer tail, I think is probably the easiest way to think of it. So our goal will be to fully expend every ERA $1. You'll remember most of them were expended before Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Commissioner. So with you supplanting the money and moving it, so it's going to wait and see, so you have no plans today to do any more funding for housing stability?
Chairman, right now we're in the middle of an open RFP with $9 million for housing stability services. If you take a look at what Congress allowed from our ERA 2 allocation, I could have done as much as $23 million. So we're holding off to wait and see what the total amount is needed in order to process the claims that came in the door. If you go back to the slide that Dan has up for me, I mean, we have received more requests, and I have more requests in queue than I have available funds, but because we have an understanding that not every request gets processed at the level that it was requested, and some of them are ineligible, it really will take until we get through the lion's share of the remaining claims before we know exactly where we'll be. The 15.7 dramatically increases the odds that that we'll be able to pay the claims with what we have available in ERA 1 and ERA 2. And then we also have the state fiscal recovery funds available as a buffer.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions, members? Okay, thank you for your time, and I think we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you, Chairman. I think you'll see Dan on Thursday. My board meets at the same time as this committee, and thank you again for moving me into the first position. I would love to stay and hear the other testifiers today, but schedule doesn't allow, so thank you.
Yep, thank you for your time, Commissioner. Members, next up, we have Senator Ports, Senate File 3937. We are planning to just delay this bill over. So we have a few testifiers. Do we have a couple of questions? Yeah, she okay. So, Senator Port, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a really simple bill. Last year, we passed the Shelter Task Force to give both folks with lived experience in the shelter systems and those who run the shelters an opportunity to be at the table together and really work and find solutions to some of the reasons folks aren't using our shelters and how we can help make them safer for everyone. The task force is plugging right along. They are meeting regularly. I am checking in with them frequently. They're doing great work. They have asked for an extension because everyone is at the table and they are moving quite rapidly through some of this, that they would like to extend from August 31st, which was the first deadline that we gave them, move that to December 15th. It's a very simple bill. I know one of my testifiers does have to go, so if we can move to Julie right away, I think that would be great.
Thank you. Senator Port, Ms. Jepson, is she online?
We might have lost her.
Okay.
Christina's also on. She is helping to oversee the task force.
Okay. Ms. Krull?
I just want to make sure you can hear me okay.
Yep.
Great. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for having me here today. My name is Christina Krull, and I'm a senior management consultant with Management Analysis and Development, a consulting group within Minnesota Management and Budget. For the past 7 months, I have had the privilege of helping organize and facilitate the Task Force on Shelter. The legislature asked the group to develop standards for the provision of shelter and to examine the need for and feasibility and cost of establishing state oversight of shelter. These are important, but certainly not small responsibilities to take on. As noted in our initial report to the legislature on February 1st, the task force has been hard at work. At the moment, members are about halfway through the process of developing standards for shelters. And next month, they'll begin discussing oversight more formally while also continuing to work on the standards. The group is on track to have a package of standards and oversight options ready this summer. One of the opportunities the task force members want to seize is to vet their ideas once they're codified in a document through a broad stakeholder engagement effort. I believe that most, if not all, task force members share the view that their recommendations will be improved by having them reviewed and considered by stakeholders across the state. The task force has proposed an extension that would move the due date of the final report from August to December. The members believe that this would allow enough time to collect additional stakeholder feedback on their draft recommendations and for the task force to then consider and incorporate that feedback. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this topic, Mr. Chair, and your committee's consideration of the task force's request. Thank you.
Thank you. And can you just update the committee on when did you guys start the process for this report?
The task force started meeting in August 2022, or 2021. I know what year it is. And we submitted our first report to the legislature as required on February 1st.
Okay, thank you. Any other testifiers?
Mr. Elwood's on only if we have technical questions.
That's what I figured. Thank you. Members, any other questions or comments in regards to Senate File 3937? Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Port. I'll be very brief. I know I have had, because I had several encampments in my district, and I know there are people that have been involved with them, have been involved with the task force, and they are finding it very productive and very helpful, and are encouraged that this could actually be good for everybody in Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dietzig. Senator Port, is there any fiscal consideration to this extension?
No fiscal implications.
Okay. Thank you very much for bringing us up to date. I'm sorry, Senator Rosen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as Senator Port, I want to thank you for working on this bill. This has always been a bipartisan bill, very, very important. I want to just put a plug in. You know, as a finance chair, I don't like to sign on to bills that have finance or money attached, but the shelter-linked mental health program has been just so successful. A report came out for these youth in the shelters, and doing mental health services through ITV has been really critical. So hoping to continue working on that, and would like your support too with that.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, you know, the more we can find the ways to link services and make sure that folks who are experiencing homelessness are also getting the mental health services that they need, the more successful these programs will all be.
Senator Port, there was a task force set up for this, correct?
That's what this is for, yep.
Yeah. So the task force will just be extended?
Just their report to us would be extended, yep. They'll continue their work and take their recommendations to stakeholders before they present them to us.
Okay, thank you. With that, members, we'll lay over Senate File 3937. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up, we have Senate File 3427. Senator Champion, you have 30 seconds. Just kidding.
Oh, see, that's just so wrong. See,
I said I'd give you a hearing. I didn't say I'd give you a bunch of time.
Hey, that is true, Mr. Chair. Let me first of all start by saying thank you so much for having me. I really do feel honored to be in front of this committee. I've never been in front of this committee, now that I think about it. But you have one good thing going for you. Actually, one, two, three, four good things going for you. Senator Rosen, Senator Dietzig, Senator Porter, Porter, and then you have Senator Rest. I don't know. Well, Mr. Chair, I like you too, let me just say. But really, you have one bad thing going for you. That guy that's sitting right over there. So, Mr. Chair, let me just say thank you again for the honor to be here to talk about this bill that I believe to be really important, and I hope that you included, I'm not sure if you're looking to pass it out or potentially include it in your omnibus bill, but one of the things that you and I, Mr. Chair, have talked a lot about is home ownership and the benefits of home ownership. I don't think I need to convince you or this committee that's had an opportunity to sit and listen to many different initiatives to underscore or understand the importance of safe and affordable housing. If you don't have safe and affordable housing, nothing else in your life works, not your health, wealth, job, food security, relationships, et cetera. We want to give people a chance to build wealth and participate in our economy in a meaningful way. We want them to have safe, reliable, let's underscore that, right? And affordable housing. Housing is the basics for economic security. Home ownership is the key to building generational wealth. Stable housing improves public safety. I often talked about the root causes that we have to think about when we think in terms of public safety. reliable housing leads to stronger families, and we believe in strong families, better health, and improvements in educational outcomes. I believe that to be very important. And according to the Minneapolis Feds, Minnesota has the fourth largest racial and ethnic home ownership gap in the nation. And so these existing housing policy reinforces these home ownership gaps, and home housing equity in Minnesota was created by policy decisions. And I think that it must be fixed with policy, good policy decisions. So this bill is an opportunity to address housing inequity in our state, especially in the Twin Cities and throughout, where the problem is most acute. And so this bill asked for $10 million in fiscal year 2023. And it looks like our ask is for that to go to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for Build Wealth Minnesota to assist families in securing home ownership. We did make sure that there was some information in your packet, and thank you to your CA who's been doing just a wonderful job, and I sincerely appreciate that. So to tell you more about 9,000 Equities, I have with me David McGee, who's the president of Build Wealth Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I hope that we can have him testify as to the ins and outs of 9,000 Equities.
Mr. McGee, thank you for being here. Please state your name and who you represent today for the record.
Thank you, Chairman and Committee, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is David McGee, and I am the Executive Director of Build Wealth Minnesota. Okay, and I guess I'll talk a little bit about me real quick. I've been in banking and financial services for about 39 years of my life. Over the last 18 years, I've kind of committed my life's work to helping families, teaching them comprehensive and really intensive financial education to kind of break some of these barriers of generational poverty, and trying to help families to build sustainable wealth, and really working aggressively since 2005 trying to address the state's housing disparity gap to try to get more families of color into home ownership. Build Wealth has been in existence since 2004. We've been doing some remarkable work, and you have been providing us an appropriation since 2015. Thank you very, very much. And it's done some remarkable work, as you probably have been handed out a report from Commissioner Hull of last year. There's always a report that goes to you and the committee and the leaders of the committee. We are a HUD-approved financial agency, and we are also a HUD-approved lender. We are a community development financial institution. We get that designation from the Department of Treasury, and we are also a local initiative support corporation, LISC. We are a financial opportunity center, and so we've been providing services with a number of other community partners that we work with. We had presented the Family Stabilization Plan as our primary program. It's a comprehensive cohort model where we take usually about 50 to 60 families every quarter, do a really comprehensive financial education component, then it's mixed with some financial coaching. We take families through like a two-year process to get them prepared to break some of those cycles and get them from using predatory products and services, get them into some real good, healthy uses of finances. And through this Family Stabilization Plan in 2013, we presented that to the then Commissioner Mary Tingerthal, who actually brought that particular program to Minnesota Housing, and they operationalized it. And currently there are 24 organizations statewide that are receiving funding that are doing more of a comprehensive approach that models the Family Stabilization Plan program. From that, we also had created a targeted mortgage pool, which is kind of tying into the request that we're having today. This targeted mortgage pool was created to help some families that have barriers in trying to access mortgages. So even though there's a number of banks in our community, There are a number of products that are in our community, but I've been an underwriter who's the one who decides whether you get a mortgage. I've been that for most of my banking career. And the underwriting guidelines were created over 90 years ago, and they haven't changed very much. And where very few families of color were actually getting mortgages 80 years ago. And so there haven't been a lot of changes. And so there is the need to have a different type of targeted mortgage that kind of helps some folks who have some barriers, not free money, but some different kind of money that has some compensating factors and some different guidelines that help people move along. We tested this targeted mortgage pool under Commissioner Tingerthal. All of those loans, for the most part, are still performing, and something similar to it is now effectively operating at Habitat for Humanity as well. And so it's just over the last couple of years as we've been doing this work, when we first started in 2005, the disparity gap for African Americans was at 31%. It's now at 19. It's going the wrong way. In St. Paul, it's at 16%, and it's continuing to go the wrong way. Build Wealth Minnesota has effectively, we've gotten over 3,000 families of color into home ownership over the last 10 years. And so we're doing our part. And we have found a way and a strategy that's been working effectively for us. And so we deliberately created an initiative called 9,000 Equities. And 9,000 Equities is to try to get 9,000 specifically families of color into home ownership over the next 5 to 7 years, utilizing some of the processes that we've been using along with this targeted mortgage pool. And our goal is to try to move that along. We brought together 21 other organizations. 12 of them are on the ground that have really made this their life's work and have been doing great work even during the foreclosure crisis, as well as the pandemic, as well as the recession of 2012. They have consistently been helping families still get into home ownership. And so with the prices of houses, the rates on their way up, time is of the essence. And so with our 9,000 equities, we put together a team of folks, a team of products and programs to try to aggressively get families in to home ownership. Since we started this process, it took us about a year to pull this off. We've gotten about 14 additional organizations that we trained to deliver the family stabilization type program. We are now in Rochester, St. Cloud, Burnsville, Bloomington, St. Paul, and South Minneapolis. And through the 9,000 equities thus far, we've gotten some great stakeholders that have participated and made investments. Three major banks, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, and Bremer Bank has stepped in to buy $90 million worth of the loans that we close based on the money we're trying to receive here to do the first origination. Bremer is willing to recycle that money and buy those loans so we can continue to get families into that pool. The Bush Foundation has just granted us a really good, a large endowment, as well as local initiative support corporation has come in with a number of others. So we've gotten a lot of great traction to move 9,000 equities. We've done a media campaign, so you'll see it on buses in a number of different periodicals, and we just need the state support to try to help us to continue this and make this a really effective initiative to address the disparity gaps. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your work. A couple questions I had. One is, what is your biggest challenge right now to help the families that you're trying to help? What's the number one obstacle that you see?
I just think,
say, Mr. Chair,
Mr. Chair, I believe that just having capacity, continuing to have the capacity to serve the number of families that we're trying to serve. We are training other partners around the state to help us with this work. But then we also have a staff of 12, and we need another 8 staff members to continue to do that work. We also need to have funding in order to do the first mortgages in order to take advantage of the fund that Bremer's allowing us to reciprocate that money under this target mortgage kind of framework.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. I think it's a really important path to helping us close the disparities gap. I know, you know, with fair housing practices and things like that, all of the programs that the housing agency has are open to everybody. And we know in Minnesota that just hasn't helped us close the disparities gap. It's kept it level or even gotten worse in some cases. So I think, you know, targeting some of the money that we are investing in housing to organizations like yours that are in deep community with the communities that we are trying to reach is a really good way to help close that. One question I have is one of the ways that you, through the 9,000 Equities Fund, is one of the products that you have culturally relevant mortgages? Do you work with the Muslim community to access loans that are, you know, allowable for their faith?
Mr. McGee.
Mr. Chair, Senator Port, yes, we actually, part of the, as I was talking about the 14 other organizations that we work with, nine of them are with the Islamic community. We were the first organization to provide a loan product that's directly, specifically for down payment assistance. We get the funding from the state, for Minnesota Housing, but we were the first one to allow for a down payment assistance with no interest to be tied to Islamic financing. Like I said, we've just trained nine of them there. What's so great about it, they followed the Family Stabilization Plan program to the letter. They're experiencing the same outcomes that we have at Build Wealth Minnesota for their community. They've actually converted it into their language, and there's some parts in it that are really intriguing and funny. And they've actually, we have a character called Got It Going On Steve, and we show people just how much Steve doesn't got it going on, even though he's making $60,000 a year. Once we go through and show all of the expenses that Steve has in real life, they change theirs to Mahmoud. They're actually, it's working really well in that community, very effective. And we've been working with Sakan, and they've hooked us up with a number of different mosques that are also working with us to move this program forward.
Thank you.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. McGee, for all you're doing. Appreciate it. We've heard a lot of bills in this committee recently on different ways to reduce that disparity gap. I like that you have in here goals, so you want to, you know, reduce it by 15%. I think that's helpful. I think we all need to look at those goals and, you know, come up with a goal on what do we want to do to reduce that gap, because it needs to be reduced for a whole number of reasons. I also like that the banks are involved in helping you. There was an article out just recently that talked about, you know, the banks aren't doing their fair share. They're behind in the number of mortgages that they give to people of color for whatever reason. I don't know why, and so I'm just putting it out there. If anybody's out there listening, you know, I think it would be helpful for them to step up and help us close that gap. So thank you.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the comments of Senator Dietzick and Senator Port. I do notice, Senator Champion, that there's a blank on page 2.1, and I was wondering if you had an amendment that you would like us to put a date in there or how we could accommodate completing the bill.
Mr. Chair,
Champion.
Senator Rest, so we are going to put a date in there. We are going to put a date in there, but I don't have an amendment today, but we will certainly put a date in there because we're all for reporting and making sure this information comes back to this committee as well.
Okay.
As well as the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we do consider this bill, I hope that we'll make sure that the appropriate blank is filled going forward.
Okay, thank you, Senator Rest.
Thank you.
I had just a couple closing comments before your 30 seconds are over, I guess. One is, you know, it sounds like you've had success with this program. And I, you know, just kind of what sets your program apart from what our state agency does or doesn't do? Can you just elaborate on that a little bit, Mr. McGee?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. As I started out when I first started talking, really the state doesn't have a specific program itself. The homeownership capacity program that they operationalize at Minnesota Housing is my program. That is Bill Wells Family Stabilization Plan model that they actually replicated and operationalized around the state already. And so even though it's doing some great work and a number of organizations are receiving funding, I believe that Build Wealth Minnesota's program is much more comprehensive. It has a two-year frame to it, and I know that doesn't work for all people, but we've been very adamant about making sure that it's long-term, it's intensive. There's over 30 hours of classroom hours. There's one-on-one coaching that goes up to 2 years. Some families have been there for 5 years or life hits them and they come back. There's an alumni component to it. It has created a referral network that is just over 4,000 families are in this network that are referring other families. And so we've got some generation. We've got mothers sending mothers and grandparents sending grandchildren. We've actually had some generational situations where we put a mother in a home, a daughter in a home, and a grandmother as a first-time home buyer. And so I think that there's a cultural sensitivity. We've become a trusted advisor in our community. We work with about 40 different churches. And so I think we're a practitioner. We're on the ground. And so I think that is, as you were, the senator was mentioning, banks, they have investors and they're required to make a profit. And as great as a bank can be, they don't have the bandwidth to actually invest the energy and time into this one-on-one handholding that's sometimes necessary to make transformation in people's lives, as well as the state agency. They just don't have the bandwidth to do the kind of work that we have are set up to be, and we've structured our organization to do this work. Those that we work with, as you can see from the report, and I know you've been getting the report for the last couple of years, it's continuing to meet its objectives, and we're touching all the people that we need to touch. And I think that handholding and being there to touch and hear and listen and work with folks that are in our community, that most of the coaches that we work with have, most of them have been challenged, have gone through a lot of different things and foreclosures and bankruptcies, and who better to help those folks get out of those challenges than someone who's made it out of those challenges themselves. And I think that sets us apart from other organizations.
Thank you for that. And I guess my last question would be, most of the testifiers that have come in here have talked about the low inventory of affordable homes. How has that impacted your organization and the good work you're trying to do?
Mr. Chair, it hasn't impacted as much as it's going to. At this point, Build Wealth is also, we are a housing developer, so we've been developing houses and doing infill development in the city of Minneapolis. We've created some triplexes. We've been getting some serious subsidies to do some development. We're over the perpetual affordable housing program at the city of Minneapolis. So we have been linking up with as many groups as possible, and we're part of the Home Coalition that I'm sure you've been hearing about. We're doing everything we can to participate in opportunities to build affordable housing. It's going to take, as you say, a village. It's going to take a nation. It's going to take all of us finding opportunity. I believe there's land. There's land to build. There's opportunity. I know there's mobile homes. Everybody is looking at inventory, and I think it's gonna take some serious work and planning, and everybody rolling up their sleeves and finding opportunities to actually build. We're working with Urban Homeworks, Habitat for Humanity, a number of community developers. We're all PRG, PPL. All of us are working aggressively to try to get some new affordable housing development. So I'm sure you're hearing a bunch of bills coming down the track around inventory. So it's going to be a thing that's necessary. Also, the value of houses have gone through the roof. If we are on the same trajectory as Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington, the value of houses are out of this world. In Seattle, I think they're over, the average median house is over 700,000. When we started building houses in 2015, the houses, the end house is 190, that's five, six years ago. Our last house we built in December and sold in December of 2021 was 270,000. It went up $80,000 in just 6 years. And so really, time is really of the essence. And I'm so adamant about this, because if we don't do this now, we're going to have a community that's going to be priced out of home ownership. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any closing comments? Any brief closing comments?
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to know why you put brief in there. I mean, I know what goes on here. Senator Rosen, you were not supposed to laugh about that. You're my friend. Okay. I just want to say this. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to present this bill. What I think you see is success with this program, even with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, because they believe in developing relationships and providing something that a state agency or someone can't. It's not that one is better than the other. It's just saying we need you and you need us, right? And so that there's this link between them. He's right. It's relational. It's trust. It is also being a good partner both with the community and the state agency, but also in the private sector. He talked a lot about his work with banks and his background. He recognizes the importance of those banks as well. So private-public partnerships is important. And so at the end of the day, we want to work together in order to make sure that people, great Minnesotans, are given the opportunity to own a home, raise a family, get to know their neighbor, impact the community, impact the state, but more than anything else, build wealth so that they can send their kids to college if that's what they want to do, or send it to a technical school, or do whatever they want to do, but for them to be able to live up to their God-given potential. And we want to do everything that we can to stabilize our families, because our children are our future. And if we don't start to build today with them, we're going to pay the debt or the bill tomorrow. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to have those brief comments. Thank you so much.
Thank you both for coming. We're going to lay over Senate File 3427. Thanks for your time. Next up, we have Senate File 3445, Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Got some folks joining me here that are going to be testifying.
Senator Duckworth, I think you need a bigger table.
I know.
Popular guy.
Yeah. Can I proceed?
Bill. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Senate File 3445 creates a grant program at MHFA to fund mediation facilities certified by the state court administrator. It appropriates $425,000 one time for this program. Allowable uses of the funding include providing mediation services to renters, property owners, households, utility providers, and homeowners, providing eviction prevention services, including access to mediation services that prevent eviction court costs, promoting awareness of the availability of mediation services, providing training and assistance to culturally specific dispute resolution programs, increasing diversity among housing mediators, integrating mediation services with legal assistance and court services, and developing tools to evaluate and improve the outcomes of housing mediation. And with that, Mr. Chair, I've got some folks up here that can shed some additional light on this bill through their testimony.
Thank you, Senator. The first one I have on my list is Ms. Bailey.
Good afternoon, Chairman Dram and committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity to introduce you to Senate File 3445, establishing statewide housing stability mediation services. Joel and I ran into each other earlier, and we're remembering that it was 2 years ago that we were here to introduce this legislation to you, and 2 hours before our hearing, the building shut down, and the pandemic began here in this space. So my name is Beth Bailey, and I began mediating as a volunteer mediator with Community Mediation Restorative Services, and one of the first projects I took on was to pilot mediation services in housing court in Hennepin County. Since then, Community Mediation Minnesota and the six organizations that make up that statewide organization have mediated over 30,000 housing stability mediation services. So you all may make reference to the conversations that happen at kitchen tables across our state. We talk about the stories that we hear at the mediation table and want to lift up to you some of the collective wisdom of those 30,000 mediation services. So in the past 2 years, we didn't wait for the legislation. In the past 2 years, with temporary COVID funding, we went ahead and launched statewide housing mediation services. And opening up for one pilot project, in a 2-week period, we received applications for assistance across 77 different counties. So in that, we experienced that this definitely is a statewide need and that Community Mediation Minnesota is capable of elevating to a statewide platform the work that's been done in local communities. In those 30,000 mediations, we've learned a few things. And one is that communication has become very strained, and we've learned that housing resources tend to be very siloed, and people have a difficult time navigating those silos in the time frame that the state allows for the eviction process. Too often, a conversation that never happened or went poorly precipitates the loss of housing and, for the landlord, the loss of rental income. For decades in this work, I have heard landlords indicate that they filed an eviction to start a conversation from somebody that maybe wasn't responding to phone calls or letters. And we've heard from the renters that they have withheld rent because they have not been getting a response to the concern that they have tried to raise. People need conversation, and right now the only resource that we're offering to people is an eviction process in order to start a conversation. There's so much common ground in the space between renters and renter providers, but we need good communication in order to find those solutions. As a mediator, I can tell you, we human beings, we need to be seen, to be heard, before we can make that mental shift to problem solving in order to create a durable agreement. And there's this cruel irony in conflict. As conflict increases, the need to communicate increases, but our capacity to communicate and communicate effectively decreases. And that's where mediation comes in. When stakes are high, when people might be avoiding conflict, when things have gotten tense in the relationship between renter provider and renter, that's when we need somebody who can help with that conversation. And then second, renters in the midst of a housing crisis face a very siloed and bureaucratic system of resources. Those resources tend to be local and not statewide. And navigating the silos takes longer than the eviction process. And people will find out that their rental assistance was approved after their eviction has already gone through. So when we fund mediation case development, which is what this bill would do, we help people navigate those silos and we help them prepare for their mediation. So as an example, as a mediation case manager, if the dispute is about non-payment of rent, and so often that's what it's about, I'm going to offer to connect those parties to the financial resources before their mediation session. So by the time they come to the mediation session, they already have an application number, they have proof that they have started the process, and that does so much more than good intentions expressed. So we're helping people prepare for their mediation processes. This legislation builds on Community Mediation Minnesota's centralized infrastructure and the regional centers we have in the state. It would staff a centralized statewide housing mediation hotline because Minnesotans should have access to housing mediation resources regardless of their zip code. And it provides funding for case management, housing case management at 6 to 8 centers across the state. So thank you, Chairman Dreheim. Thank you, Senator Duckworth, for authoring this, and thank you for bringing this to the committee for a hearing. Senators, thank you for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Next on my list, I have Ms. Sund up next.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Dreheim, and to all of the committee members. I'm Sharon Sund. I am Program Director at Conflict Resolution Center, but I am here today to testify primarily as a property owner. I have owned property in Dakota, Cook, and Hennepin County. In every one of those counties, I have had trouble with renters. And in one case, there was neighborhood conflict. And in retrospect, I recognize that mediation would have helped to create understanding and a plan to rectify the conflict. But it ended up that the renter was forced to move out, and I ended up losing money in the deal. I had a problem with a renter in Dakota County that required eviction court. The sheriff had to be, I had several, you know, going back and forth from, I lived in Hennepin, I had to go to Dakota, I had to go there for to file the paperwork, I had to go there to go to eviction court, I had to go back to file the paperwork for the sheriff, and then I had to go back for conciliation court and then to file the paperwork to garnish wages. But I, in retrospect, if we could have had a conversation and gotten a plan, it would have saved me a lot of money, and it would have saved that renter from getting an eviction on their record, that they were a family with the child. And unfortunately, it did not end well. And far too often, this is what happens. And property owners lose money, time, particularly small property owners that don't have attorneys or if you have to hire an attorney, it's just very costly. Another situation I dealt with, I had a renter, and you don't want to get to the point where you evict people. And I allowed this person to move out, but she owed me money. And I'm a businesswoman, and she wanted a reference. Well, I've, you know, been dealing with you, not paying and saying you would, and I'm not giving you a reference. I'm not giving it until you give me, until you pay the rent that you owe. And she was crying, begging, and as much as I wanted to help, I felt like I was fed up. So I was a mediator by that time. So I asked the organization if they would get a neutral party to do a mediation. They were able to mediate an agreement, and because the family, she was saying she's homeless because she couldn't get a reference. And we were able to mediate, get an agreement that involved a payment plan, and then I was able to feel that I was going to get my money and I could give her a reference. So I only wish that I had known about and had access to mediation early on as a property manager, and to be able to have that access statewide. And so I'm asking that you would approve this bill to give property owners the opportunity to have access and know and to learn about this process and create win-win situations. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I have Ms. Amundson.
Thank you, Chair Dreheim and committee members. My name is Dana Amundson, and I'm the Housing Program Coordinator at Mediation and Restorative Services in Blaine, and we primarily serve residents in Anoka County. I'm testifying in support of Senate File 3445 because I firmly believe that housing mediations have an important part to play in the continuum of housing services by seeking a shared resolution for both the owner and the renter. In my daily work as a housing program coordinator and as a mediator, I often hear stories of individuals and families who are seeking out services well after they have received an eviction notice. As you are all aware, the eviction process can move quite quickly, and if folks aren't already well connected to services, they might not know where to turn. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I received a phone call from a man who'd been evicted and needed to vacate his multi-generational family within 24 hours. We spent about half an hour on the phone together as we searched for emergency resources in his area. While we weren't able to mediate this particular case, it clearly emphasizes the need for preventative housing mediation services. Mediation could have benefited both the property owner and the renter by coming to an agreement on potential rental payment plans or even a move-out plan. By using mediation, the property owner could have saved the time and cost of going to court, which is a hassle, and the renter could have accessed other housing resources earlier. Housing mediation services truly try to work upstream where there are more options available and prevent situations like this from occurring. With this bill in place, community mediation centers would have more resources to reach both property owners and renters across Minnesota and share with them the benefits of mediation. So I thank you all for your time and support of this bill today.
Thank you. And Ms. Arnold is not on, correct?
Correct. She will not be testifying.
Okay, yep. I just wanted to make sure, so thank you. Anybody else like to testify in this bill? Members, do we have any questions? Senator Duckworth, you're really good. No questions.
So, well, we have the benefit of going last, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a benefit some days. I appreciate you bringing this forward, and I know we've had discussions in the past on it, so I think... you know, personally, I'm pretty familiar with the program, so thank you for coming and giving us an update. With that, I think we'll lay over Senate File 3445.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Members, thank you, any other business? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone. And we're 10 minutes.